Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. So England leave it to the very last few minutes, just 5 minutes of daylight left before they beat Pakistan by 74 runs in a thrilling first test match in Rawalpindi. We'll try and digest what has happened over the last 5 days. And as well as that, we'll be joined by new Durham head coach Ryan Campbell and new Sussex head coach Paul Farbrace after they were both appointed in their roles this week. And we'll hear from ECB chair Richard Thompson about the latest regarding the future of the 100. So plenty to come over the next hour. This is The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Army, I don't know where to begin. It was the highest scoring test match of all time. And the very end of it, Nasser Sain said it may be one of the great captaincy performances of all time by Ben Stokes. And it might be tempting to think that he was caught up in the emotion of it all, but I mean, I don't think he was. It was absolutely brilliant in so many ways.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I don't think that's an overstatement, to be honest, from Nasser. Ben Stokes is brilliant this week in everything he's done. The way England have gone about their business to give themselves a chance to win the game. A lot of people ask you, what does it take to win in Pakistan, in India? And a lot of the time, it's time. The game goes so slowly, and if you don't have that mystery to make the game fast forward at the end of days four and five, then you have to buy yourself some time. And you know what, man, as I said this on the following on a couple of days ago, if it wasn't the England cricket team and Ben Stokes playing on that wicket this week against Pakistan, if it was any other team, we might have been talking about the end of Test cricket. We might have been talking the end of Test cricket, because any other team wouldn't have scored at seven and over. Any other team wouldn't have tried to win like Ben Stokes has tried to win. Any other team wouldn't have declared 343 with 3.5-4 sessions to go to try and force a result. We probably would have had 500, played 500, played 124-2, shake hands, hour before the end of play, and we all going, what a waste of 5 days we've just had. You know what? We've gone from possibly the end of Test cricket to the beginning of something special in a Test match captaincy career of Ben Stokes, because we said loads of nice things about him on this show, because obviously how well we think of him, but the way he's gone about not only the summer just gone, but this Test match in general has been mind-boggling for the decisions that have been made. You know, a 40-year-old bowler gets 4 for on a docile pitch to win England the game with 5 minutes to go. Ollie Robinson was magnificent as well. But, you know, Ben, hats off to Stokes in the way he's led his team, telling his team we're going to win, making his team believe they're going to win. And even right at the very end there, you know, trying to get them over the line, the belief that this group of players have got now, you know, the world's there for them.
It's such a good point you make. You know, there's been almost 2,500 test matches, and this one could have been one of the very worst, instead of which it's one of the very best.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been sitting thinking, you know what, can you remember when we talked about the Australia test match here and the pitch got marked down? And that's what would have happened. Any other team, any other mentality. I'm listening to Nasser Hussain. I've played for Nasser Hussain. Not a cat and nails chance. Nasser would have gone for 60 not out when they're in that 120 for one, 120 for two. It doesn't happen anymore. And, you know, this, the way the mentality of what the English were, even last, less than a year ago, 2 years ago, Joe Root not going for the runs at Lords against India. It just shows you where this team is trying to go. And you know what? If they had got beat, I probably still would have been saying these things about Ben Stokes and how positive him and Brendan have been. Because if you put yourself in a position like what they have done in the lost, I tell you what, if they kept doing that, they'll win more than they'll lose. And then, you know, fair play to Stokes and McCullum for doing that.
Scoring 500 in a day, Harry Brook hitting 27 off and over, Joe Root batting left-handed. What will be the images that remain in your head?
The Joe Root one was hilarious. Colley said afterwards, and Colley was right, to be fair. Colley said afterwards, Joe Root bat better left-handed than Colley bat right-handed. Yeah, you've got a point, because the shot he played, with the execution of shot he played, was excellent. It was first class. I think Harry Brook, yeah, and I've said it this week, a lot of people have asked me, even bats asked me when we were commentating, what have you got against Ben Folkes? And because I've said so many times on this show that I wanted Johnny Bairstow to keep wicket at the start of the summer. And why are you having a go at Ben Folkes? And I'm like, I've not got anything against Ben Folkes. I think Ben Folkes is a fantastic keeper, but I know how good Harry Brook is. And I want to get Harry Brook in my side. And the only way I got him in my side is if one of the batsmen, i.e. Pope in this game, or Bairstow, would take the gloves and keep wicket, because that was the only way you could fit Harry Brook into the side. Now, the big question is, how on earth do you get Johnny Bairstow into this team? Good luck on that one. But I thought he was excellent. You know, he broke the record the first innings, and he came out second innings and broke the record again for amount of runs per over. And, you know, the kids talked about how good he could be. We've got off to a good start in his test career.
Okay, you mentioned Paul Collingwood there. Let's hear from the assistant England coach talking about Stokes and McCullum as pioneers.
It's been pretty clear right from the start that we're willing to lose games for the sake of, you know, putting ourselves in a position to win them. When Baz and Ben took over, the number one priority was we need to keep hold of Test cricket for the sake of the game. We need to make it entertaining, just like T20 cricket has been. And, you know, the bigger picture is the most important thing. This is, for many players, when you ask them what is the one form of the game they want to play, and it's Test cricket. But we've got to make it more entertaining. And, you know, that's, they're almost, feels like they've been pioneers already in terms of how they're going about playing the game. Obviously, the way that we're batting, we really are putting opposition under pressure and doing things different to what we've always done and how the game's always been played. So it's great to watch. It's exciting, you know, for us in the dressing room to experience it. I'm sure it's more exciting for you guys yourselves to watch it. And if the byproduct it means for us that we win games, then so be it. But if we lose and it's been exciting, then, you know, again, it's still a win for Test cricket.
That's Paul Collingwood, and pioneers is exactly the right word. And a lot of captains, well, not a lot, but a few previous to Ben Stokes have talked about being prepared to win in order to, being prepared to lose in order to win. Not very many of them have been genuine about that. And, you know, there was a point, there were several points. There were an hour or two where England did look like they might lose this Test match.
Yeah, and they did when Azhar Ali was going well and Mohammad Rizwan was going quite well about lunchtime. You're thinking, game on here. I think it was 184 I think they needed in two sessions. Even the last session, they needed 83 on the last session. And in the two times, and, you know, Pakistan got 80 in the last session, I think in the first innings. So when you looked at it, yeah, the game was still in the balance all the way. And that's what we want from Test match cricket. Where Ben gets it from, I'm intrigued by that, because the captains that Ben's played for, he, don't think he played for Strauss, but Alistair Cook was very defensive. He was out of the Strauss mold. Joe Root was probably out of the Cook mold, which was another one, very defensive. And Paul, listening to Paul there himself, you know, me and Paul disagreed on a couple of things when we were playing at Durham, and largely down to the way the game was played. Paul was more defensive than he was offensive. And Stokes, the majority of Stokes' domestic career was played under Paul Collingwood. The only one I can think of who always used the phrase in when he was captain was Dale Benkenstein, who he would always say, look, if we're prepared to lose the game, we've got a good chance of winning it because we are driving the game forward. And I just wonder if he's got a little bit of gone that stuck in his mind when he's decided that this is my mantra as captain. So yeah, not many will say, go through with what they say when they say we're prepared to lose the game to try and win it. But boy is Ben Stokes doing it. One of the best lines I heard this week was of David Gower. It was hilarious when I think somebody asked him, has Ben Stokes dangled a carrot? He went, no, he's offered the whole vegetable patch. Perfect line, brilliant line. And he did. He offered, there was a lot more in Pakistan's favour on that surface than there was in England's, especially with, you know, the three fast bowlers only used in that second innings.
A word about another Ben, and it's interesting, Ben Duckett. I mean, for him to restart his Test career and then play with such positivity, and, you know, it'd be easy, wouldn't it, 6 years after your debut, and you get another chance to just fill your boots and to play for yourself. And, you know, and he could easily have ticked over and scored 100 off 200 balls. But no, you know, McCullum and Stokes, it seems anybody that comes into the team, they're told this is the way we do things. You buy in or you ship out.
Yeah,
So congratulations to Duckett.
Yeah, he batted excellent as well. And, you know, the dismissal on the second innings, people would have, bygone days would have criticised that. What? No shot. What on earth is that shot first ball? But this is just the new way. And I think if you come in with that mindset, and you come in with that way, playing for the team, not as an individual, not for yourself, but for the team, you will be given a huge amount of chances. When you look at Zach Crawley, you know, they see the ceiling level of Zach Crawley. They knew they wanted Zach in the team. They know how good he can be getting off the starts. And he had a huge amount of chances. And Alex Lees is the other one that they're probably seeing the opposite and thinking, it's just not for this group. It's just not, you know, he's an excellent player, Alex Lees, but he's somebody who drives up the game possibly a little bit more than what the others do. And England have identified that role isn't there anymore for this team. So he didn't get the chances because he possibly doesn't fit the way that this England team wants to play. Whether he has a resurrection during the summer and he comes back, time will tell, but he might have to change his game to get that. Ben Duckett, he is that, like Zach Crawley. He is somebody who will get England off to a fast start. He is somebody that puts the bowler on the back foot. And I think because of that, like we've seen in the first innings, McCullum and Stokes will give him ample amount of chances. So it wouldn't surprise me if now Ben Duckett is in the group, in the team, probably at least till the end of the Ashes, and England will give him, you know, as many chances as he possibly can to get England off the starts like they had done in this Test match, to give them the best chance to buy themselves some time to take 20 wickets and win the game.
And finally, Harmy, I said it was the highest scoring five-day Test match of all time, 1,768 runs. So that means we should talk about the bowlers. And England did it upside down, didn't they? The spinners took the wickets in the first innings and the seamers took them in the second innings. Will Jacks, 6 for 161. There's almost as many first-class wickets as he's ever taken in his career. But Gareth Paddy did say at the beginning of the England summer, this boy can bowl. Stop calling him a part-timer. So 6 for 161 for a part-timer. And Jack Leach, 2 for 190. So they took 8 between them. How about Anderson and Robinson? The seamers taking the wickets in the fourth innings on the last day. 8 for 86 between them. My feet were bleeding for them.
Well, and it's the skill level was frightening. We know how skillful that Anderson and Robinson are on English wickets, in and around off stump, make it hard for the batsman to come forward to because of, you know, the splice of the bat that they hit. This was different skill level altogether. This was making a ball move laterally, using reverse swing. Sometimes bowling a good length on a with a reverse swinging ball into the batsman is very, very difficult because you don't know how much of the degree it's going to swing. So getting your lines right and getting the ball to go on to off stump as opposed to starting a two straight and on off stump, and by the time it gets to the batsman, you get sort of clipped off your legs and you're easily milked. They weren't easily milked. They caused so many problems in and around that off stump, and they got some a little bit of luck because a couple of them caught down leg side, but they deserved the luck. I thought Robinson and Anderson were brilliant. Can you wrap them up, get them to Multan, and wheel them out again? That the selection dilemma is going to be interesting because obviously Livingston comes out. Do you keep one we haven't mentioned? And I thought he was brilliant. Yeah, he might have shelled a couple, but Ollie Pope was absolutely fantastic. I mean, we talk about in the subcontinent bringing in a specialist wicketkeeper because it's so important. You know, the glove work. Hats off to Ollie Pope because it probably up until 24 hours before that test match started, his preparation on wicketkeeping would have been virtually zero, absolutely none. And he's kept wicket brilliantly. He's catched down leg side on day five of a test match. So whether do they go with him again to get the extra bowler in the team, the seam bowler in the team, I think that'll be the question marks that's coming tomorrow once they've enjoyed this victory tonight. But can they wheel Robinson and Anderson out? Because two very, very skillful bowlers, and they're going to need them. Because if Multan is as flat as what Rawalpindi is, then Will Jacks, who's got six for 161, he might find himself out of the team because England might just play a one spinner. There will be all the conundrums that go, but fair play to Jacks. The one thing about Jacks I enjoyed was his first 20 overs were different to his second 20 overs, and that was with a sleep in between. And I think that was a great sign for me that this kid learned on his feet because he probably bowled a little bit too slow. He bowled a little bit too sort of English line wide. But when he bowled his second 20 overs, when he come back the next morning, when he had probably had a chat with Jeetan Patel, bowled a little bit quicker, a little bit flatter, and he was on it. And for me, somebody to learn as quickly as that in international cricket and supposed to be a part-time bowler and then get six wickets, the boy's got a future, which is great to see. It just enhances the pool of players for England to pick.
Let's look ahead now to that second test match in Multan. I assumed that, and I still think that Mark Wood will play. As you said, Liam Livingstone has been ruled out of the tour. He's flying home with that knee injury. And would you really keep Ollie Pope as keeper? I mean, you'd have to put your arm around Ben Foulkes and say, listen, mate, you are the most unlucky England cricketer for the last 3 or 4 years. The poor bloke, you know, he's had unfortunate injuries. And if it's a needs must situation, it's like, Foulkes, you're still our man, but Ollie's going to keep in this test match because we play another bowler. Is that how you're going to go?
Possibly. Do you know what? All bases are covered here because I think they've got a decent array of options. You have to obviously look at the wicket and see where, if it's going to be like Rawalpindi, where it's not going to spin that much, that you potentially need to go with the mystery spinner and the leg spinner is probably not the game for him in Riyad Ahmed. So you sort of process of elimination. Livingston's out, Ahmed out. We've now got down, we're now down to 13. How do we get these 13 into 11? Well, Robinson and Anderson Stokes have proved that on these wickets, reverse swing's probably the way to go. Now, if that's the case, then you're probably going to want to keep Robinson and Anderson in. Can you afford to go with only one other seam bowler? I would like two. Obviously, I can't play 12. Do we look at somebody like Overton and Wood playing as opposed to keep the sort of the battering ram of, they take the new ball, have a go with a bouncer tactic, which I thought was brilliant with a new ball. And then as the ball gets older and scuffs up, you know, reverse swing comes into play and you bring, obviously you've got Anderson and Robinson for that. You probably can't play them both because you've got Stokes and that's Overton and Wood. So that's what I'd be looking at your game plan if you're playing a wicket, very similar to Rawalpindi. So the problem with that is how you fit them all into 11. And possibly one of the options would be to keep the status quo from a wicketkeeper point of view and bring in Overton for an Overton and Wood, if you want to bring them in for, you know, Livingston and possibly Jacks, who would probably be the unlucky one because I still think you've obviously you've got to have a control on spinner, and Jack Leach would be that one. You just don't know what the surface is going to be like. But I think England need to bring another seamer in to help out Robinson and Jimmy, if you can get another test match out of Jimmy in such a short space of time. I would imagine these will be all the things that are going through Ben Stokes' mind and Brendan McCullum's. The biggest thing is they've got a great chance now to win a test series in Pakistan. And, you know, I was there 17 years ago. We should have won the first test match. We didn't. Then we played on two absolute flat roads. Now Pakistan might have to play on something that's got a little bit more spin in it, or more in it for the quicker bowlers, which probably brings England into the game. But if I could get Wood and Overton into the team, I'd be trying my level best.
Final word on Pakistan, Hami. People will say, how did Pakistan lose that? How do you score 579 runs and lose a test match? But just from the body language of the players immediately afterwards, it just seemed to me that Pakistan were completely magnanimous, and they were like, fair enough. You know what? You won it. We didn't lose it. I mean, you know, there was genuine, we won't go as far as to say affection, but certainly respect and admiration from the home side.
Yeah, 100% agree. When you look at it, we've talked, you know, we've gone over the top on how well England played and how good Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum and the players that have performed in this test match. But I think we have to praise Pakistan as well, because bygone years, talked about bygone days, England captains wouldn't have declared. Bygone days, there would have been a lot of time wasting at the end of that test match, and there wasn't. And I think hats off to Babar Azam and his team, because as well as it will go down as one of the greatest victories that England has ever had away from home, but Pakistan contributed to that test match, because they didn't give up. They didn't give, you know, didn't give an inch. They got runs on the board that contributed to a wonderful 5 days. So from a Pakistan point of view, yes, they played very, very well. And it's going to be an interesting 2 test matches to go, because if England aren't at it, Pakistan will be, especially on the surface that they are. But as much as you want to be as joyful as you can be from England's point of view, I think you have to be thankful for the way Pakistan played and contributed to a wonderful 5 days.
And finally, for now anyway, because I think we'll talk about this test match again in the weeks to come, but honorary mention for Keaton Jennings, who had to field throughout both Pakistan innings after Livingston's injury. And he was in there at short leg. At one point, he was fielding on the batsman's feet.
He was on his knees, wasn't he? He was on his knees. He took a great catch as well. He took a really good catch. And to be honest, you know, man, and I've known Keaton for a lot of years. He obviously came through Durham's Academy. And if you wanted a 12th man with enthusiasm for the job, it's Keaton Jennings. It is. He just loves cricket. We had him on a few weeks ago and talking about the game. He's obsessed by the game. He loves the game. And if there was ever a 12th man that you wanted out there with you, that wasn't going to moan, wasn't going to kick up a fuss because he wasn't in the team, wasn't going to whinge and that he's got to do it for somebody else, it would be Keaton Jennings, because he's one of the nicest men in cricket. He loves the game of cricket, and I'm sure he'd have been over the moon to be out there just to be involved in what was an epic test match.
Okay, moving on. Well, not completely away from the subject at the moment. Ben Stokes, when he retired from ODI cricket, you and I spoke about it just hours after his decision. I said that it was an emotional decision. It was a reaction to appalling scheduling. And I also bet you £5 on air that he would unretire and play in the 2023 World Cup. Well, last week he said that he was open to unretiring. So do you want to send the £5 over?
I'll send £3.50. I was 2 pound in the good, I think. I think now I'm a little bit less. I think he'll come. I think you're playing the World Cup. I think the bilateral cricket, the way the world's going now, I think some of our big players will just play in tournament cricket in the white ball game, especially the ones that play red ball cricket. I wouldn't have a problem with that. I think that would be the best decision possible. Rob Key in the England selection panel, that your big players, just play them in. Yeah, we've got a World Cup coming every year. And if they play red ball cricket, just play your big players in the big tournaments, and the bilateral series is have a look at some of the younger players to plug the gap to make sure the pool of players is still getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? If Rob Key and Brendan McCullum said to Ben Stokes, we think it would probably be a good idea if you played maybe 650 over games before the World Cup, or even three or four. Here's the schedule. You can pick them. People used to be up in arms about that thought. You know, you can't pick and choose. Yes, you can. Yes, you can if you're Ben Stokes.
You can if you're Ben Stokes. You can if you've won two World Cups for your country. And you can if you are now arguably one of the most exciting captains in Test match cricket. I think if you're Ben Stokes, you're walking on water at this minute in time.
Okay. Now, how much of the Australia-West Indies Test match in Perth did you get to see?
Not much, to be honest. I didn't see much, but I did watch one of my good friends' son, which is crazy to say, make his international debut. And you know what? I thought the boy did brilliant. I thought Tegna Ryan did absolutely brilliant, Chanderpaul, for the West Indies. I think what I did see, West Indies lost by 167 runs. But in the grand scheme of things, of the roller coaster of the soap opera of West Indian cricket, I'd have been coming away from that thinking, we've got something to work for here. We've got something to work with here, because I think there was a lot of good positive stuff come out of that West Indies. They were probably more together than I've seen a West Indian side for a long, long time. As building blocks go, I think the West Indies are now potentially got a little group of players now that are going in the right direction. So Brathwaite looks like he's a good leader. Holder still wants to play Test match cricket. They've got an energetic bowling attack. If they can get some runs to stay in the game, and they've got off to two good starts, they've got a chance. Playing Australia in their own back garden, that's hard. And especially the way Labuschagne and Smith are playing. Hopefully, Labuschagne and Smith are using all their runs up in their summer. And when they come over to the English summer, they're all burnt out.
A final word in this section to John Lewis, whose reign as England women's head coach got off to a winning start in the West Indies with a dominant 142-run victory in Antigua. There's an awful lot more to get through. We'll have to do it next week, because we've spoken too much about an amazing first Test match. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. Next up, we'll speak live to new Durham head coach Ryan Campbell after he was appointed this week.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm delighted to say, as promised at the top of the show, we're joined live now by Durham's new head coach, former Netherlands coach Ryan Campbell, who's in the Netherlands at the moment. And Ryan, before we get onto a long list of questions and interesting topics, I've got to ask, how are you? And actually mean it this time. How are you?
I'm going really well now. Thanks for asking. It's one of those things that earlier in the year, for those who don't know, I was in England. I came across to visit my in-laws, and we were at a place called Bewilderwood, having a good time with the family, I'm told, but I can't remember any of that. But I woke up 7 days later and had been told I died 15 times, and not sure what had gone on, but I just kept coming back. And I guess the romantic in me says that I was never a quitter. And the love of my family kept bringing me back. But in all honesty, I know how lucky I was. And I guess without getting too deep or anything, but, you know, to any guys out there, especially between 40 and 50, maybe it's time just to go get checked. I was fit and healthy. You know, I think I've always been fit and healthy. But, mate, I literally laid down and died. And, you know, it's so lucky that I was standing next to a lady who had just finished her CPR course, and she brought me back some miraculous way. And, you know, now I'm still here to tell the tale. Obviously, I watched Denmark and Manchester United a bit, and watch Ericsson go about his work, because we've got the same piece of apparatus in our chest. So, yeah, mate, extremely lucky, but it's given me a different perspective on life, that's for sure. And I don't think many people can say, well, you went to the other side and came back. And let me just tell you one thing. I didn't see any pearly gates or white lights, so I'm a bit nervous about how I live my life. So I'm going to have to reevaluate a few things.
Oh, you say you went to one side and came back. You've gone from one side of the world to another, from, you know, Perth to the Netherlands, but to Durham. Other than being cold, what have you heard about Durham from Marcus North? I think it's the best county in the country, but I'm biased. But what have you heard about the great city of Durham and what the county entails, and, you know, how much are you looking forward to coaching there?
Mate, I am so excited, Steve. And I'm not just going to say this because you're sitting there, but I've heard nothing but good things about not only the club, but the people of the North. It's a wonderful area where they'll make you feel really, really welcome. And to me, like, coming from Perth, now, again, us Aussies are we're a weird breed, as you all know, but coming from Perth, we always believed it's the West versus the rest. And that's what made us such great, is so good in sport. And picking up on the, just talking to guys and ex-coaches and players and stuff, I think that the North versus the rest is very clear. And I love that sort of stuff. And it's something that, you know, I'm really going to look forward to being involved in. And, mate, I'm very big on where we come from. So, you know, our players will hold their clubs for first, very dear to them, because that's the foundation stones of Durham cricket and the city as a whole. Where, you know, I'm going to embrace every part of it. And, you know, my kids are moving. The only thing I'll say now is my 7-year-old, who loves his football and has grown up here, the only team he's ever seen is Man City. And when I mentioned that we're going to go and maybe I'll take you to a Newcastle game, I was greeted with a very dear frown saying, "No, Daddy, I'm a Man City fan. So please don't tell anyone that my 7-year-old's a City fan. We'll try and work on him and get him following Newcastle or someone."
As long as he's not a Sunderland fan, you're all right.
I'll tell him that.
Ryan, quick reflections on your time with the Netherlands. Although you weren't at the T20 World Cup, you laid many of the foundations and many of the players paid tribute to you and the coaching that you'd done with them. They obviously qualified automatically for the 2024 T20 World Cup. They beat South Africa, which was a hell of a scalp. You must feel very proud of their achievements and what you did.
Oh, mate, 100%. And I was there, Neil. Don't worry about that. I was there. You know, what we did was a guy called Ryan Cook took over, you know, through the summer when I was, you know, off work and stuff. And we just felt, I knew my time with the Netherlands was coming to an end at the World Cup. I'd always planned it. I thought it was a great way to finish. I'd been there for nearly 6 years. And I just sort of discussed with him, maybe it's best if Ryan continues to take over. I'll come as a consultant. I'll finish the way I want to finish. But to look at and see our boys, what we've done, I say my boys, because, you know, you get very close, and that's the sort of coach I am. I love the relationship with players. And you know, to see where they came from 5.5, 6 years ago, where, let's be honest, the Dutch were pretty good at having a party when it came to cricket. and we would win every now and again. And, of course, we don't want to bring up that we knocked the English off a couple of times in World Cups. But I think I installed a lot more professionalism in what we had. Everyone knows that we've had county players before and still do. But with Brexit now, we can't have our guys looking to aspire to play county cricket. So I needed to build the depth of talent in the kids that were coming from the Dutch. And I think that's my biggest achievement was the bus delayers, the Vikram Singhs, young Philip Boussevain, Shariz Ahmed, all these youngsters who have come through our pathway. I had to give them opportunities. And, you know, you started to see Max O'Dowd had never opened the batting until I came and gave him that opportunity. So I guess with a different set of eyes, you can see things. And that's the same that I'll look at Durham. I'll look at all the players with a, you know, no forward perception, so to speak. It's just literally, I'm going to see how the puzzles fit in, basically, and the pieces of the puzzles. But, mate, the Dutch, it's a fantastic story to beat South Africa. And to be honest, the only thing I said before that game was, just remember the history of South African cricket in World Cups. And it's one of those sad things. And I actually felt a bit sorry for them. But, you know, at some point, South Africa are going to mess it up in a World Cup. And depending on, and, you know, as soon as they won the toss and said, we're going to bowl first, I made mention to my assistant coach, Jimmy Hilditch, mate, we watch them take the gas here because they reckon they're going to bowl us out for about 100 and then knock them off. If we make 150, we're in the game. And that's what happened. And our players, you know, bowled really well, defended well. But in the end of the day, putting an associate on the map and the story it made that we could have an effect on the whole outcome of the World Cup, I think that was a fantastic thing to happen. And, you know, obviously for them to qualify for the 24 World Cup, so it means we avoid. Remember, the World Cup qualifiers now change, and there's only two teams that are allowed out of Europe, and that's Scotland, there's Ireland, there's us, in summer, where we don't have all our county players. So it was going to be a nightmare. So very happy, very proud of the players. And, you know, like I say, I'll always be a Dutch fan. My kids speak fluent Dutch. I'll always keep an eye on them. But now I've got bigger fish to fry, so to speak, and hopefully I can do a good job at Durham.
Just to finish up, Ryan, on the Dutch, do you think it could be used along with Ireland and possibly Scotland when touring teams come to England? So instead of playing, you know, Leicester second team, Northampton second team, we've been saying this quite a bit on this programme that why don't they go to Holland first and play a four-day test match against Holland? Or why don't they go to Ireland and play a four-day test match against Ireland? Because surely that will be better preparation for the touring team, but as well as, you know, the education of cricket and the associate level.
Mate, Stevie, you've knocked it on the head, mate. It's one of those things that I think, I guess, I've been in the associate world now for about 10 years, you know, in Hong Kong and here, and I've watched these associates grow and the depth of talent in all the teams, and the gap has closed from, you know, number 10, number 9 in the world to 12 or 13 to 16, 17. Mate, it's closed. So we have to promote the game. And the only way we can do that is to give the Dutch, give the Irish, give the Scots opportunities to play. There's no doubt that we were so good at the World Cup this year because we're in the Super League and we've had a summer. We've had Afghanistan, we've had England, we've had the West Indies, we've had Pakistan, we had New Zealand. Mate, we were ready to go. And that's what playing against great opposition is. So I've always said, you know, teams that are coming, no disrespect to the county system, but those county teams don't want to play a touring international team. They've got enough cricket. So, yeah, if we can, I think we've got to angle it that the Irelands, the Scotlands, the Dutch, we get to play those big teams and we'll be better opposition because it'll mean something to us. I keep saying us. I'm gone now. I should just stop that. It would be, and as we showed, even against England, I know there was a world record score and all that sort of stuff, but, mate, there were 7,000 crazy fans in that stadium having the time of their life, watching good cricket, drinking beers, passing out under the bleachers, you know, because the old Dutch way is, mate, you do what you want. As long as you're not an idiot, come and have a good time, watch some cricket, get booze, end up in a coffee house or something, and you never know, you have a great day. You wake up 3 days later.
And what's Durham got in store from Ryan Campbell? What are you going to, first of all, what's your first thing in the intro? You're going to tell the Durham players about yourself and how the next part of their journey is going to be from their head coach?
Mate, there's two things, Harmy. The one is I love this game. I love everything that comes with the game of cricket. I've been luckily involved in 30 years, and I want to make sure that those players understand that this game has to be loved, because if you start to get into the cycle and things don't quite go right, mate, it can turn around and bite you on the bum very, very quickly. So it will be about enjoying the game and the love of it. I want players at the end of my time and the end of their time at Durham to actually say out loud when we ask for feedback, mate, how was your time? And they're going to say, that was the greatest time of my life. No doubt about it. I had an awesome time. So that's the environment that I want. And the other thing is I hate draws. The worst thing about cricket is drawing. And I noticed that, you know, last year we had 8 draws in the championship. If I can convert 2 or 3 of those to wins, and again, we're probably going to lose a couple on the way because, mate, the gloves are off. The safety net is gone. I'm about, at any point in the game, how are we going to win this? That's the only question players have to answer. And of course, and again, without being too deep, but fearless versus reckless, we're going to make sure that the line is very clear in the stand. But, mate, our players, especially our batters, they got to go for it because, as you know, mate, to win county games, you've got to take 20 wickets and that's going to take time. And so my batters need to understand that. We've got to give the bowling staff as much time as possible, go about it, and hopefully people on the sidelines are going, gee, that was fun to watch, and Durham are winning games.
Ben Stokes hasn't been talking to you about his theory on playing cricket, has he?
Oh, it's a bit hard not to ignore, but I'm not sure we're going to go at 7 and over, which is quite ridiculous. But look, they've obviously embraced a very, and they've got a team full of those sort of batters. So obviously you've got to balance what you've got compared to where you want to go. But I think it's just about players having really, really good basic games. And if we do the hard work now, make sure their basic game is in order so that they can take and absorb the best that people can throw at you, either with a bat or the ball, but then we can throw back at them. I think that's the basis of a really good cricketer. So, yeah, I'm going to be big on basics. Don't get me wrong. We're going to do more basics and out-basic the other team, hopefully, in the off-season than during the season. But, mate, we're going to come back with a bit of fire as well. So, hopefully that and the knowing that the gloves are off, the draws aren't what we're after. It's about winning games of cricket. Hopefully that all gets in good order and we can be very successful.
You're not yet immersed in the county game, so it would be presumptuous for you to talk about the structure of the England game. But I know that you follow it and you would have been following the debate about Andrew Strauss's high performance review and reducing the amount of first class cricket and the 4 formats and the 100. Any sort of overriding thoughts?
Mate, coming from a country that lost first class cricket, when I started, we had what we called the I Cup, which was an unbelievable place to teach kids how to play the game. And I always think that the longer form of the game teaches players. And we had Dan Christian as a consultant through the World Cup and you know, having long conversations with him. Now, there's one guy who's probably one of the most successful T20 players, white ball players in the world, but he always comes back to, it was because of my first-class career. That's where I learnt my game. So I always worry if you're going to take away first-class cricket. I'll be honest, and again, I probably shouldn't say this out loud, but if they're reducing it to those 6 teams, how do I get Durham to be one of those 6 teams? That's my goal. I don't care about everyone else. I want to be one of those 6 teams. So, and that's coming from a long way back. So, you know, it's obviously we got to get everything, our structures in place first. But if that's the way they're going to go, then we're going to be a part of that and we're going to embrace it. And again, you're listening to an Aussie talk about English cricket, but I have a passion for the game and I've always sat and watched county cricket with, I guess, the same sort of love towards our Sheffield Shield cricket because that's where we make players. And I think over the last few years, what we've seen is in Australia for sure, the Big Bash goes too long. So there's gaps for those first class cricketers during that time. And obviously it's happened the same here where, you know, the 100 and the blast take over for a little while there. So somehow we got to get the right balance because we all know that it also costs a lot of money to run the game. So we need to cash in as well. But hopefully, mate, the guys that get paid all the money to make those tough decisions will come to it. But I don't know Strauss at all. But from being an outsider looking in, it sounds like a guy who listens to people. and he's always open to the right people. So obviously Rob Key's a great guy doing a good job for England. So as long as the right people are talking to each other, hopefully we find the right balance.
And one person that's talking the right noise to his team at the minute is one Benjamin Stokes. How is it exciting? I know you're not going to work with him too much, but you will work with him probably off the field quite a bit because he's always at the ground. He's always practicing there. As well as that, exciting to have the likes of Potts, Wood, Koss, and potentially Ben for a couple of games next year because the room have got some very, very good young players. Trust me, I've been in there and seen them at close quarter, but they've got some fantastic bowlers as well if they're fit. And you know, you're talking about giving them time to win matches, but the likes of Bryden Koss, yeah, if Mark Wood does play a couple of games and Matt Potts, Durham have got a bowling attack, especially on flat wickets, to take 20 wickets.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like I say, the North East is renowned to be a production line of fast bowlers. And, you know, I think it's John Windows who does a great job in the academy, who's produced all these players. So, look, when I sat down, and I'll be honest, I got offered another position in county cricket. And when I sort of sat down and spoke to my wife, she said, let's go to the warm. I said, let's go to the cold. But when we actually spoke about the cricket side, and my wife's not a cricket fan, but she's very clever and listens and can put things in order and the pros and cons, so to speak, Durham just stood out. It was being associated with a guy like Ben Stokes, you know, to see how he goes about his work, to see if I can learn from him that then can teach our youngsters. Because, you know, there's a couple of young all-rounders there as well, and hopefully we're going to get a couple more that can add. And who better to learn from? So, you know, when you talk about those sort of guys and Mark Wood and that, it's you want to be around the best players in the world, I reckon. And that would make me a better coach. And the reasons, plus throw in Marcus North, obviously my history with Marcus, it was just a great fit, I think, except for the cold. I'll go back to that. But except for that, I just think it's a great fit. And like I say, I'm excited, like every new coach about to start a new adventure. And, you know, you're all excited. But I honestly think when I get there, it's going to feel like I've been there for ages because that's just the feeling I get already that it's just a wonderful place to be.
Your enthusiasm is infectious. I can't wait for the season to roll on. Any doubts physically at all? I mean, it's a pacemaker that you've got. And does that allow you? Are you hundreds now?
Mate, I'm 100. I've got what they call an ICD, which basically is my insurance policy. You know, my heart's in perfect shape. That's the weird thing about it. But if it picked up that I was sort of going in a weird way, it would give me one hell of a shock and I'd be back in the land of the living very quickly. So I tell people don't sit next too close to me. But the biggest test for me is I'm not a great flyer. I've never been a great flyer. So when I get on airplanes, I get a bit nervy. So I've got to sort of calm myself down and relax and sit back and relax and go through it. But mate, it honestly, I was back at work, not full time, but I was back at 42 days after it happened. You know, I was there watching, analysing, doing stuff, and then started throwing and doing all these sort of things. So the fitness, I'm probably not as fit as I was before it because I've obviously had to be careful of the program that they've put me on. But that will also, the handbrake's going to be taken off that as well. So, mate, the good thing is, you look after a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, you've got to be on your game very quickly, especially when they can speak another language and you don't. So they're all over you, that's for sure. So I think they're my greatest fitness test going around.
Thank you so much for your time, Ryan. As I said, I can't wait for the season to roll around. And you're absolutely right about Durham and all those draws last year, and that many of them were winning draws. So if you can make that 10% of difference, I think you'll be winning a lot of games.
Thanks, mate. We look forward to the challenge. And like I say, I'm excited about the squad we have. Hopefully we might see a few new faces as well. But the big thing for me is I'll be promoting as many youngsters as I can and, you know, really pushing the Durham brand with our pathways and hopefully develop some future English cricketers.
That was new Durham head coach Ryan Campbell. Tell you what, Harmy, it's going to be a roller coaster ride. It's going to be fun.
It is. It's going to be great. And listening to his enthusiasm for the job, he sounded brilliant. And players will want to play for him, which is a good thing. He sounds as though he wants to win games, which is brilliant. Durham, you mentioned the draws. I think the groundsman, he needs to get on his side very, very quickly. because I don't think the groundsman was too keen on not sitting on his roller and having any green grass on it. I tell you what he's got, Manners. He's got a very, very good young side who I think with Ryan Campbell's enthusiasm will go a long, long way. Michael Jones at the top of the order. I still think that boy could challenge and push for an England place. I really do. I think he's a good player. Seen glimpses in the T20 World Cup for Scotland. What he's got, Lees will go back and score a load of runs after playing international cricket. And if you get Carse fit, you could potentially, for maybe three or four championship games, have a bowling attack of Carse, Wood and Potts. I'll tell you what, that's an excellent attack. So with all that in place, he's got something to work with. And fingers crossed, the enthusiasm he's got for having a chat with me and you will not dwindle when he gets up to the northeast in the cold, because there's some good, exciting young players at Durham. 19s are very, very good. And some of the age groups down below. I know he's only signed a 3-year contract. There's some very, very good young players. You mentioned John Windows. John Windows has produced some very, very good players in the past, and he's got some good ones there at the minute as well. So fingers crossed, Durham on the up and up.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and two-time county championship winner, Steve Harmison. I'm delighted to say, as promised at the top of the programme, we're joined live from Abu Dhabi by the new Sussex head coach, Paul Farbrace. Farby, congratulations on the position. First question is, apparently you were headhunted. You didn't apply for it.
Look, I did have conversations with the club for quite a while about the role. And I've been looking, I'll be perfectly honest, I've been looking for something since I left Warwickshire, something nearer home. Living in Kent, I was looking for something nearer home. And I was looking for a project that I could really get into. And I had a couple of conversations with a few organisations. And about 10 days, 12 days ago, I had a good conversation with the chairman at Sussex, which led to them being interviewed formally. And then being offered the job. So look, I'm delighted because I think it's an absolutely brilliant opportunity. A lot of good young players, one or two seniors in Ravi and Finney to work with as well. But, a lot of good young players and a lot of potential. And that's the thing that really excites me, to be honest.
There's a common perception that swapping director of cricket for head coach is slipping out of the suit and back into the tracksuit. Is that how it works?
Yeah, look, and also with this role, it's responsibility for professional cricket. So that includes the director of cricket role for professional cricket, which I'm excited about because that gives me the opportunity to really shape something. I've learned a lot over the last 4 years at Warwickshire. I've said before, it took me 2 years to learn what a director of cricket did and how he's supposed to operate. And so, having had 2 years of knowing what the job's about, and look, I love being in with players. That's, I think fundamentally I see myself as a coach. Absolutely brilliant 4 years at Warwickshire, and I left on really good terms, and they've been fantastic to me. They allowed me to come and do this T10. They were allowing me to do the T20 Emirates League in January, February as well. So, Warwickshire have been absolutely fantastic. It's a great club, but this is a new challenge. And as I say, I'm delighted to be back in a tracksuit and get my shorts on and get in the nets and do what I think I do best, which is working with players, hopefully.
And you mentioned working with players, Farby. There's an exciting bunch of players there. I was at Durham for Durham's last home game. It was against Sussex. And I know Durham won the game convincingly, but I came away thinking, he's got a chance of playing for England, this kid. He's got a chance of playing for England, this kid. And the thing that the problem I seen with Sussex was the more and more they keep getting beaten up, how much is that affecting the young lad's confidence? But boy, there's some talent there.
Yeah, and look, I think in county cricket more than any other form of the game of cricket, you need good senior players around your youngsters, don't you? And, you know, it's brilliant having young players come through. In your time at Durham, crikey, you've been a club that brought through so many young players. And your senior players, the likes of you and Colley and other senior players that are around them, play a huge role. So, my job with Grant Flower and James Kirtley is to make sure that we get the senior players in the right place, and then we set up an environment for these young players to really develop and grow. And you're right. I think there are three or four really talented young cricketers who have the potential to play for England. I hope that there's quite a few that want to play for England because, if they've got desires on playing for England and they want to get better, then hopefully they're going to push themselves on a daily basis. The danger when you have so many young players is it's almost they expect to play and they know there isn't that much when it comes to competition for places. They expect to play, and maybe they get a little bit casual in their practice, and they just know they're going to play. So I think we've got to make sure that we really foster a spirit of working hard every single day to be the best they can be.
When you look at Sussex, it seems from the outside they're a white ball club who play red ball cricket, but not, it's not something that's high on the agenda. Is that something you want to look at and try and change?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think looking at their white ball team, their blast team for a period, they were very much almost two separate teams, weren't they? You know, they had a fantastic white ball team, and a lot of those players then went off and played around the world in franchise cricket, and then the red ball team sort of came together and played championship cricket. I think the only way and the best way to develop these youngsters is to get them playing all forms of the game, and to, you know, get away with and do away with them being seen as either a red ball or a white ball specialist. You're a cricketer, you know, you play the game, and whether it's 10 overs, 20 overs, 50 overs, 90 overs in a day, the game is the game. And the best way to improve is to play all forms of the game. And that's how we're going to improve, you know, the Haynes, the Orr, Carson, young Archie Lenham. The best way we're going to help them improve is for them to play all forms of the game and not be specialised as one or the other. And I think that's a really easy way to get players to improve.
Been a lot of change at the club, obviously. You mentioned a couple of senior players who've stayed. Many have left. And last year, I think the average age of the squad was the youngest in a county since about the 1890s. Is there some smoothing of ruffled feathers to be done as well amongst the members? There has been a bit of turmoil.
Look, I think, you know, a club like Sussex, who went through a period where they were really successful, you know, under Pete Moores, they had a fantastic time. Mark Robinson carried that on. And I think there's a danger that all clubs sort of feel that, you know, there's a bit of a right to win trophies and there's a right to be in the top division and challenging for trophies. But you have to earn that right, you know. And as Harmy's just said then, I think that there looks to me from the outside as though there was a real focus on white ball cricket, just purely by the way the teams were set up. And I think now we've got to get back to earning the right to be challenging for trophies. But the one thing that I'm not doing is going there to have an easy time. I want to go and win, and I want players to win, want to win, and I want players to want to play for England. And for me, it's very simple. Whether it was at Warwickshire, wherever it is that you work, now at Sussex, I think there are three key things. You develop a spine of homegrown players. You develop players to play for England at all levels. So that's England under 19s, Lions and first team. And you develop a team to win trophies. And I make no apologies or excuses. I'm not going to be typically British and say, oh, it'd be nice to compete. I want to win. You know, I really do want to win, and I want to get in there and get stuck in. And right from the start, I'll be talking to the members and the players about winning. Now, that puts a bit of pressure on me and others around me, but we should have that pressure. We're not just turning up to be a nice team to play against and, you know, just jog along, because that's no good for anybody. So, you know, I hope that I've been given the job because they think I've got a chance of doing that. But I am desperate to win games of cricket and win trophies. That's what you play the game for.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think it's when you think of that Sussex side that I played against, when you mentioned Morsey, and they had a game plan. You knew the game plan of when you were playing Sussex. It was, they were going to contain you until Rana got it either with a new ball or when he got it reverse swinging, and Mushy would bowl from one end and everybody else would bowl around. You knew what you were getting with Sussex. So is that something you're going to try and achieve by bringing in overseas players? Because I had with the younger players last year, you had some, you know, top overseas players. You know, watching one of them play at this very minute on my TV, and that's Mohammad Rizwan and the likes of Pujara, and they were top quality players.
Yeah, and look, as you rightly say there, I mean, you know, you think then around that, you know, Chris Adams as a captain who was a proper leader, he was feisty, he wanted to win. Matt Prior, crikey, I mean, you know, no one more desperate to win games of cricket than Matty. So, you know, they had fantastic players. And what we've got to do is get back to having that real desire to win, that real passion to win. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying they haven't had that, but I think that's something that you can really quickly get into a team. And then the other aspect of it is, you're right, Pujara is signed to come back. You know, Cheswar Pujara, one of the best players in the world. And I saw him get 100 in the 50-over tournament, Edgbaston last year for Sussex. He played brilliantly. And you're going to need him to be fantastic. Jaden Sills has been signed for the first half of the championship season. You know, hopefully Joffre Archer will be available to play some early games as well. Ollie Robinson will play some games early on before the Ashes. So, you know, if we can get one or two of those players in, get Finney back playing and get Finney back to his best, he may not be able to play every game, but if when he is playing, we can get the best of Finney, we then give ourselves a chance of being very, very competitive. And once you start to win a couple of games, it's amazing how quickly that goes through the team. And, you know, you've already highlighted that if you just keep getting beaten, you almost turn up expecting to get beaten. We've got to turn that round now and expect to win. Not hope to win, expect to win. And that's, you know, that's something that we can start that as soon as we possibly can in terms of the language we use around the players we talk to.
Last time we spoke to you on the Cricket Collective, you mentioned about coaches becoming a bit lazy in their technique. Yep. I think we were talking about batsmen batting on off stump and that kind of thing. And you said that, you know, there was a feeling amongst some coaches that you needed to give players space to discover things for themselves. I assume you're not going to be lazy at Sussex.
No, absolutely. And, you know, and I wasn't saying people are not throwing balls or hitting catches or talking to players, but I think we've got into a state in English cricket where we've almost sort of said, well, you know, you do what you want to do and we won't disrupt you too much because we don't want to annoy you. We want to stay in our jobs as coaches, you know, and we watch the England team playing brilliantly at the moment in all forms of the game. But those players have earned the right to get to that level. They've done the hard work to get to that level and being allowed to play with that bit of freedom. But every team needs parameters. Every team needs a structure. And then within that structure, you can go and play how you want to. And that's what, you know, that under Rob Key, and Matthew Mott and Brendan McCullum, that they're playing with a real freedom, but there is a structure there as well. And what we need to do in county cricket is make sure that we are producing high quality players with really good solid techniques who can then go and play at the next level. And that's where I think it's up to us as county coaches to work really hard. And sometimes you have to be unpopular with your players to make them work that little bit harder. Make sure their techniques are sound, whether it's batting, bowling, fielding or keeping, that when they go into that England team, they stay in that England team and they don't come back and they say they can't cope with this level of cricket. Their techniques are not good enough.
Just a quick word on T10 cricket. How much coaching can you do there?
Oh, yeah, loads. You've got 60 balls to go in it, as many sixes and fours as you can. It's a tough game. I mean, we were really lucky. We had a brilliant bowling team. We had a fantastic bowling team. Naveen Ulhaq, AJ Tyre, Adil Rashid, Peter Hatzoglu. We had a fantastic bowling team. Our batting, we had Hales, Vince and Chris Lynn at the top of the order. And we didn't just quite fire. But, you know, when you've got people like, you know, as I say, James Vince, Alex Hales, Chris Lynn at your top three, you're not spending too much time talking to them about how they're going to play. You're encouraging them to go and play their natural game. And they've got 60 balls. And it's, I came here last year thinking it's a brutal game for the bowlers. It's actually worse for the batters because they're trying to hit world-class bowlers out of the park for six every ball. And that's not an easy job sometimes. So it's great fun. And it's more about you've got 2 weeks to bring a team together and get them playing as well as you possibly can. The best team won out here, Deccan won, Mushy's the coach, and they had some fantastic players, played brilliantly, and they deserve to win it. But it is a great tournament for players to play in.
Finally from me, Fabio, you mentioned about structures. What do you make of the structure of English cricket at the minute? High performance got kiboshed. Where do you think what avenue do you think we're going down? What road do you think we're going down from a structure of English cricket? From you've had a director of cricket's hat on, you're now going to have a coach's hat on. We don't know where we're going to be in 2024. Where do you see, you know, the structure of English cricket going?
Well, the England team at the moment, you know, we're holding the World Cup 50 overs. We've just won the T20 World Cup. They're playing unbelievable test cricket. I mean, your mate Keezy's got them playing with Baz. Unbelievable cricket. I mean, it is fantastic to watch. And those players have come from county cricket. And I've said many, many, many times, the players only come from county cricket. They don't come from anywhere else. So county cricket's alive and well. My fear is that in Strauss's paper, he presumed that every county wants England to be number one in the world in all forms of the game. I don't think they do. I don't think every county is convinced about producing players for England. I think there's a lot we are concerned about looking after themselves, and I don't think the game is aligned. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is, you know, what we can't afford to do is keep restricting and reducing Red Bull cricket. Because at the moment, if you're a young English batsman, and out here in the T10, Harmy, there's probably been three or four players in every team from England, young batters who strike the ball brilliantly, fantastic players. Smead's been playing out here, Joe Clark, you know, as I say, Hales, Vince, there's so many players out here playing that are brilliant English cricketers. you can play 9 months of white ball cricket around the world in the year, playing at home and then away in the winter. And in county cricket, if we keep reducing the games, at the moment, we only play 3 months of red ball cricket. We've got to be really careful we don't keep restricting and reducing red ball cricket, because we're going to narrow our field of red ball opportunity and red ball batters. We're going to narrow it even further. You know, and you know, we haven't got many high quality red ball top order batters in our game. We've got loads of middle order players, but we haven't got too many at the top of the order that can open the innings at the moment. And my fear is if we keep reducing county cricket, we're going to dwindle those numbers down even more. So I think county cricket is a fantastic game. I think it produces so many fantastic players, and we can see that in the England team at the moment. But we just have to be careful with what we do with red ball cricket in this country.
Farby, thank you so much indeed for your time. I know you've got a plane to catch. Hopefully you'll be turning left and there'll be a glass of bubbly waiting for you.
I hope so too. Thank you very much, fellas.
That was New Sussex coach Paul Farbrace, and we wish him all the very best at Hove next summer. You've been listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back at roughly the same time next week to reflect on the second test between Pakistan and England. But for now, this has been another edition of The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.